Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Tzadi Hei Amud Aleph, four lines down. The Gemara is continuing to try to ascertain whether Rav Huna's statement is true, which is in Balanafot Minapet Kulo, that if you're going to have to take out whatever refuse, whatever discard that you have within the Peirot, once you start doing it, you have to take it out, or you just have to get it below the threshold. Rav Huna believes once you start, you got to clear it out completely. You can't just get it below the threshold of a quarter kav. So Gemara is bringing different instances through Shas, where we have you either bring something below a threshold or eliminating it completely, and then trying to see whether we can use those as a paradigm for our case over here. So once again, this is something that's familiar to us in the Gemara in Baba Metzia, with Tagrei Lod and Ona'ah, Tashma, Ha'ona'ah. When it comes to overcharging, undercharging with regards to merchandise, Pachot Mishtut, if it's less than 1/6 differential from what is the true market price, the whole thing is done, complete. Basically, there is an assumed mechila over here. The way the Rabbeinu Gershom explains it, Mishum delo diale in nitane ilo nitane. The buyer, the seller here, doesn't really know if they were overcharged or undercharged. Vavi mechila. So the way that the Rabbeinu Gershom explains it, it has to do with whether you know or don't know about the fact that you've been mitane. And over here, even if you find out the information, it's not clear that you were overcharged or undercharged. It's within a sixth of the market price. The way that the Rashbam expresses it is, it includes that reason, as well as, Mio lechach ein mafzir. That's why you don't have to give anything back. The kevin delo yedia kolkach, ukeshave dami avya mechila. Since people aren't so exacting, a market price is something that fluctuates, and therefore when you're within a sixth of the market price, we assume that basically that is the market price, because it's just too hard to pin it down to a particular price or an exact amount. So the Reino Gershom focuses on your ability to know that you've been mischarged, whereas the Rashbam just says that it's within the normal margin of error, and therefore, pachot mishtut, you don't have to do anything. Yoter mishtut, if it's above a six, batel amekach, then the transaction is unwound, it's invalid, because you charged too much, or you undercharged over here, and it's a sufficient amount for us to undermine it. Shtut, if it's exactly a six, kana, the transaction stands, umakziro na'ah, but you have to refund the amount. Amai, why do you have to refund the amount? Liha der ad pachot mishtut. Why don't you just get it below a sixth? Here we have halacha, below a sixth, transaction's fine. Above a sixth, transaction's invalid. At a sixth, we say that the transaction's valid, but you have to refund the differential. Why refund the differential? Just give a little bit back, and then you're under a sixth, and then you qualify for the under the sixth. So, shma mina, koheka de baila dure kula mehader. So this would be supportive of Rav Huna's position, that whenever you have to come back and deal with something that's in excess of what is acceptable, you have to then eliminate it completely. You can't just get it below the threshold. And that would be supportive of Rav Huna. Rav Huna says, achi ashto. How can you compare the cases? Over there, when he purchases the object, he's assuming that he's purchasing it at that price, at the equal price. So Mar says, Miu, pachot mishtut, lo yedia, umachilinish. Since below is shtut, people don't know about it. They are mochel, and therefore the transaction stands. Shtut, when it comes already to a sixth, yedia, below machilinish. Once it reaches a shtut, it's something that people do not forgive or do not waive. So therefore, this transaction stands, but you have to refund it. If it's more than a sixth, then the transaction is undermined, and you have to reverse the entire transaction. But you see over here is that it's not clear what the yediyah means. The yediyah means, is it discernible? When he says less than a shtut, there's lo yediyah, does it mean, like we saw before in the Rabbeinu Gershom and the Rashbam, does it mean it's not discernible, the amount? Or it's not clear that you're overcharged or undercharged because there is natural fluctuation in the market price. Market price doesn't sit in an exact amount. It fluctuates between a little higher and a little lower than the current market price. So that might be the market price. Market price might be a band rather than a particular price. So either way, that is a forgiveness. At a shtut, you expect to get back to the normal market price. Above a shtut, you don't believe that you're going to transact at all because it was way over the amount that you would assume. Over there, when he purchases the object, he's assuming that he's purchasing it at that price. Now, there are deviations off the price, but he's not expecting you to deviate from the price. He's expecting you to give him a fair market price for what he is buying. So that's the assumption up front. Now, if the deviation is small enough, we say there is mechila, either because it can't be discerned, or you don't know if you've been cheated, or it's within the margin of error, but otherwise you expect it to be shaveh b'shaveh. Therefore, if you're coming to fix a problem, once the problem reaches a threshold where you have to fix it, you're going to get it back to the true market price, because that's what people buy. But over here, when it comes to our situation, the assumption of dirt, rocks, stones, whatever is included with the peirot or other peirot that get mixed in, that is something that is expected. You know when you purchase these items that it's going to come together with that. That's an assumed part of the purchase that you're going to get that. And therefore, it may be different. But you see here that there is a price that you're targeting, and that's your assumption of what you're buying it for. It's not that all of a sudden if you get a little bit above a six, we say, okay, just get it below a six. That's not what your intention. Your intention was to buy it at the market price, not to buy it above that market price or below that market price to sell it. And therefore, you rectify the situation to get it to the market price. In our situation, that's assumed to be a part and parcel of whatever you're buying with the fruits. And therefore, you might have a different outcome. Over there, you might have to refund the whole thing. Over by us, maybe you only have to get it below the threshold because that's an assumed risk, or the person's mochel up front that he knows is going to get that as part and parcel of the fruits that he buys. So tashma, maybe we can bring it from here. Hamekabel sadeh mechaveiro lita, a poel, a worker who gets land from an owner, a landowner, and the conditions of his employment are that he's going to plant these fields, plant them with trees. And then the owner will pay him for planting the land with the trees, whether they have some sort of sharecropper agreement or whatever the way that they pay out. The balabayit, the landowner, assumes that when this individual has planted all these saplings, he will have a loss rate of 10%. Buriot is like from the word sadeh bur, that we talk about a field that is laid fallow. So too, buriot over here means trees that are not successful, trees that don't take, whether that means that they don't grow at all, or it means that they grow but they don't bear fruit. The assumption is that if you put in 100 trees, 10% of them are not going to turn out to be okay. Yotermikan, if it goes above that level, galim alav et hakol, then we force him to deal with all of them. So for instance, if he planted 100 trees across this tract of land that he had given him, we find out that 10 of them are problematic. That's an assumed risk. If 11 of them are problematic, then not only does he have to rectify the one to get it down to 10%, he's got to rectify all 11 of them. He's got to get it back to the start. So now again here, it sounds like this is a proof to Rav Huna. Once you're engaged in rectifying something that is above the threshold that is acceptable, not only do you have to get it below the threshold, you have to clean it up completely. So do over here, even though 10% would have been acceptable loss rate, once you're dealing with 11%, you got to take it all the way down to zero. You can't just get it back down to 10%. Again, the Gemara says, maybe the cases are not comparable. That whenever it's more than 10%, it's as if he's coming to start from scratch. The way that the Rishbam phrases it is that this person had a huge tracts of land to deal with, and he is planting trees all over the place. Then now, when we figure out he has more than 10 trees that are problematic, or more than 10% that is problematic, that means that he still has a whole field left that he needs to deal with. That's considered to be a significant enough amount that it by itself is a field. And therefore, when you're above that threshold, you still haven't completed the job that you were set out to do. The job you set out to do was to plant his fields. But now he has a field left that hasn't been planted, because 11 trees out of 100 or 11% of whatever you planted is above the normal loss rate. And that means that whatever is considered to be a loss over there, you're going to have to replace now, because it's as if you let the whole field fallow. You promised him to plant all of his fields. Now you have a tract of land or field that is fallow. You've got to go now and take care of it. Once you have to take care of it and you're planting the field, you got to plant the field in the proper manner. That's the way the Rashbam says it. The Balei Tosafot, in a nuanced manner, it's very similar but a little more nuanced, suggests that when you're hired to do your job is to make sure that the fields have trees on them. If you knew up front one of the trees you were planting was not going to be successful, then you'd have to replace it. Even though there's an acceptable 10% loss rate, that's only if you planted it and then we figure out later on that the tree is not viable. But if you knew up front that the tree wasn't viable, you can't say to him, look, you know, it's under 10%, it's fine, I just put in that tree. No. If you knew up front it wasn't viable, then you'd have to replace it immediately. So what happens over here is the same thing. Your job is to plant trees in the field. If it's under 10%, then we assume that those are normal loss rates and you did your job. If it's above 10%, then you haven't completed your job. Your job was to plant trees in the field, to plant viable trees in the field. Now you haven't done that, so now you need to finish your job. Well, if you haven't finished the job yet, then whereas if we're at square one. At square one, if you know the trees are not viable, you have to replace them. So that's what the Baalei Tosafot are saying. You're basically at square one again, and now you know these trees aren't viable, so now you got to replace them, because that would be no different than if you knew up front that they weren't viable, that you'd have to replace them. So that's how the Tosafot phrases it. Again, that you're still engaged in the original work that you have to do, and that's what compels you to have to replace the trees. The Rishbam just says that it's too significant a tract of land, and therefore you haven't completed your job, because your job was to make sure all the fields are planted. And now you have a field that isn't planted. If that's the case, you've got to plant that field now in order to complete your job. So if that's differentiated then from our case over here, over there, there's a complete miss. Here, by us again, in the case of the fruits, we know that there's going to be this discard or this problematic stuff that's in the fruit. And maybe that's already acceptable up front. Even if we knew up front that there was dirt, rocks, and pebbles in there, you wouldn't have to remove them, because that's an assumed part of purchasing peyrot. Even with that information, you wouldn't have to remove it. So maybe over there, all you have to do is get below the threshold. You don't have to clear the whole thing out. So Gemara ends here, inconclusive about Rav Huna's position. Rav Huna made a statement. We tried to go throughout Shas to look for Tanaic works that support or undermine it. And each time we noted there was a difference between whatever that case was in Rav Huna, and therefore we can't bring any conclusion from those versus the position of Rav Huna. Now the Gemara moves on to the latter part of the Mishnah. In the latter part of the Mishnah it says, Martef shel yayin, if you buy a seller of wine, then mekabel alav, you accept eser kosusot demeya. You accept 10 problematic barrels of wine per 100, or 10% the loss rate in the seller. The Gemara says about that, hey chidami, what exactly is the scenario? What did he say, or how did he articulate the sale in order that this will come about? If he sold him just a seller of wine, kasha, it's problematic. He says this seller of wine, kasha, that's also problematic. And if he just said this seller, kasha, that's also problematic, because we're going to see the Tanya. We have a bright that's going to address all three of these issues. And in none of the sequences here does the bright to say that you accept any losses. Well, if that's the case, what's the case in our Mishnah if you have no case in the bright where there's acceptable losses? Martev shel yayin, he says, I'm going to sell you a seller of wine. Yotein la'u yayin shekulu yafeh. He's got to supply him wine that is good, meaning good wine, and not only good wine, all of it has got to be good wine. So again, that doesn't match up with our mission. Our mission says you have a right to a 10% loss rate. Martef zesho yayin, ani mocher lecha, and if he says, this seller in particular, I'm going to sell you full of wine, notein lo yayin animkar b'chanut, then he can give him wine that is sold in the store. In that he's accepting whatever the quality of the wine is in this cellar, the buyer is accepting that, and the lowest quality wine that is acceptable is called yayin an mikar b'chanut, wine that is sold in the stores. The way that the Rabbeinu Gershom describes it over here is, notein lo yayin garua, this is bad quality wine, kegon an mikar b'chanut, like the stuff sold in the stores. Fish yesh lo bal habayit yayin garua, many times homemade wine, he can't sell it anymore out of his house because the quality of the wine has deteriorated to the point where it's not sellable, or even up front. He has wine that is of a lower quality. He gives it to the storekeeper, the mochro, to sell it on his behalf. He sells it out in the marketplace. Where you have people that are passing by. It's like a pit stop in the shuk where you go and pick up some wine. Konim oto po'alim, ovrei drachim. Workers and travelers or passerbys buy it. Shem mevakshim kol kach yayin yafeh. They're not looking for the best quality wine. They're looking for a drink, a quick drink. So they're not looking at quality of wine. They're simply looking at something that's inexpensive that they can drink at the time. And remember, again, yayin in their time is not like today, where it's yayin is for special occasions only. It was a staple product. It was one of the things that they drank on a regular basis. You didn't have fruit juices because you didn't have refrigeration. You had water, wine, and beer. Those are the only things that had any shelf life to them. So wine is considered or classified as one of those staple drinks. And so people who are going through the shuk and want to pick up a quick drink, they literally pick up a quick drink. But it doesn't have to be of the highest quality wine, and they don't want it to be expensive. So over here in the second part of the Braita, it says that that yayin that's nimkar b'chanut is fine. But again, number one, you don't have any loss rate over here. And number two is, our Mishnah never mentions anything about the quality of the wine. Martev ze'ani mocher lecha. He says, I'm selling you this cellar. Afilu kulo chometz. Even if the entire thing is vinegar, higio, then it's yours. Too bad. So now, the Braita breaks down into three different categories. There are words that are used that have to have definition or have to have meaning in the case. One of them is the word zeh. When you say zeh, this particular one, that means that the person who's buying it is accepting a certain amount of degradation in the quality of the product, because the individual said it's going to be this, and this is what you're going to get. On the other hand, you have a statement that I'm giving you or selling you wine, yayin. So then, at that point, it has to qualify as yayin. So in the first case, in the Braita, it simply says, I'm selling you wine. Wine, or the definition then of wine, is good quality wine. That's the way the Braita starts. The end of the Braita's last case is when he says, I'm selling you whatever's in this cellar. He never tells you what the quality is. He never even tells you that he's selling you wine. It just says, I'm selling you this cellar. Okay, normally in the cellar you have barrels of wine, but sometimes the barrels turn into vinegar. And what he's saying to me is, whatever's here, you get it as is. That's Martev Zeh. Now, when he combines the two, when he says, it's Martev Zeh Shel Yayin, I'm selling you this cellar of wine, then we have to balance between the two positions. One is saying that whatever's here, you're getting. The other one is saying, I'm selling you wine. So that's that middle case in the Braita that says that you sell them lower quality wine. Anything that is still called wine, as long as it's called wine, it qualifies. Because he said zeh, that's what the seller or this particular seller allows you to do. On the other hand, he said yayin, that means that it's still got to qualify as wine. If it's vinegar, then it doesn't qualify because then you don't match what you said, which is that you're selling him wine. So the wine part means it has to be defined as wine. The zeh part allows you to give whatever quality is found in that seller. So now the Baal Tosafot actually note that later on the Gemara is going to say that the yayin that we're speaking about here is yayin which smells like vinegar, but still tastes like wine. So it still has a flavor, a taste of wine, but already the odor that is emanating from it is indicative of the fact that it is vinegary. And so, again, that's what the Rabbeinu Gershom was saying. That's why the guy gives it to the Chenvani to sell, is because you know that it's reaching the point where it's going to deteriorate, or soon enough it's going to be vinegar. So you want him to get it to a person who has high traffic, and people aren't so discerning. So that's how you get rid of it. The Baal Bayit is selling at a much slower rate, and he's also selling it to people who are going to be more particular about wine. As the Baal Tosafot point out, nobody is going to put money down on that type of wine. Put good money down on that unless it really is good quality wine. If it's going to be hanimkar b'chanut, that's already like almost like water. It's not the equivalent of wine, and therefore it's called wine, so you classify as wine, but that's not enough to be classified fully as wine or to have money put down on it. And that's why the word zeh has to be in there in order for that to be the case. But it doesn't deal with the machloket in the Gemara and Avodah Zarah about this issue. Whether wine that smells like vinegar and tastes like wine, is it classified as wine or is it classified as vinegar? So he says, maybe this Gemara is only according to the one who thinks that it's classified as wine. He says, no, even according to the one who says it's classified as vinegar, it's still called wine. So even though it's classified as vinegar, meaning that its categorization is vinegar, nevertheless, in terms of the word that is used to describe it, it's used the word yayin, and therefore that would also qualify over here. All right, so now the problem is none of these languages allow our Mishnah to be the case. Our Mishnah says you get to sell them wine, but you have a right to a 10% loss rate in there. So basically you could sell them 100 barrels of wine, 10 of them could be vinegar and you're totally fine. None of the cases in the Braita have that option in them. It's either you could sell them all vinegar, you could sell them no vinegar. That's the only two options that we have in our Braita. How do we have a language in our Mishnah that matches up with this Braita? Gemara says, Olam damarle martiv shoyayin stam. It's a case, the first case in the Braita, where he says to him, I'm selling you a cellar of wine. Vitana bereisha de Braita, and then emend the first line in the Braita to say the following. Umikabelalav eser kosusot de meyah. So that first line in the Braita, which says that when you say I'm selling you a cellar of wine, means that I'm selling you good quality wine. There's a qualification of that. Yes, I'm selling you good quality wine, but it's acceptable that 10 of those barrels will have wine in it that's not such good quality, or even possibly vinegar. So that's the way the Gemara deals with it, is to say that we have to amend the Braita. Even though the Gemara doesn't say chasure mechsera over here, what it's really saying to us is that that's the definition of a cellar of wine. A cellar of wine includes high quality wine with a certain allowance for losses in there. And that's what you would expect. If you bought a cellar of wine from someone, you expect them to have really high quality wine in there. But you also know that there's a possibility that a couple of these barrels are not going to turn out so well. And so that's the definition of a cellar of wine. And that's what the Gemara deals with it, is to say that the ratio, the first case in the Braita, is what our Mishnah is speaking about. Gemara says, wait a minute. Ubistam mimikabel. Is it really true when you use generic language to describe wine that you accept a certain loss rate? Va'atani Rabbi Chiya. Doesn't Rabbi Chiya say in a Braita, Ha'mecher chavit yayin lechaveiro. Someone who sells a barrel of wine for his friend, noten lo yayin shekulo yafeh. He's got to supply a barrel of wine that is completely good, high quality wine. So why don't over there we have a loss rate that is allowed? If you tell me when you sell wine, there's an expected loss rate that comes with it, how come Rabbi Chiya over here says when you tell him I'm going to sell you wine without any qualifiers, you have to sell him high quality wine without any loss rate? Rabbi says, wait a minute, how can you compare the cases? Shani chavit dekula chalecham rohu. When you're talking about a single barrel, that is one quality of wine. As the Rabbeinu Gershom says over here, ha'echad itra mixat itra namikula. If a portion of a barrel of wine is already turned to vinegar, you can't have a portion of the barrel be vinegar and the rest of the barrel be wine. Right? A barrel has a singular quality of wine that is found in it. So either it's all wine or it's all vinegar. It can't be both. So that's why it's different. When you're talking about a cellar of wine, you're talking about a cellar full of barrels that are in there, and each barrel has its own quality to it. So there you can talk about loss rates. You can talk about the possibility of some of these aren't going to be as good as others. When you're talking about a single barrel, over there you can't make a distinction within a single barrel and say, well, half the barrel is vinegar and half the barrel is wine. That's just not a plausible situation. First of all, that's what the Rabbeinu Gershom says. And the way that the Rashbam says it is Rabuta Nakat. It's a chiddush over here. The Sagadatcha the Shtiala Alter Kabayile. The person who's selling it to him thinks that he's selling it to him for immediate usage. Oh, the machro, whether that is to sell it, with Kamash Malan, is that we don't allow you to sell him this lower quality stuff. We don't allow you to sell it to him, assuming that he's going to use it quickly, and therefore you don't have to worry about the shelf life. The chiddush is that when he buys a barrel of wine, despite the fact that you might have thought that you could sell him lower quality stuff because he's going to use it quickly, or he doesn't care about the quality, the answer is he does care about the quality. And in caring about the quality, then you have to give him yayin yafeh. Once you have to give him yayin yafeh, then you can't have any accepted loss rates because you can't separate within a single barrel. You can't differentiate within a single barrel. Or if he's buying it to keep it in his cellar, then you have to give him wine that's going to last. If you give him poor quality wine, it's just not going to last. So you're not giving him what he wants. So that's the chiddush of Rabbi Chiya, but that doesn't undermine what we're saying here. Now the problem is, v'ha'atani Rav Zvid. We have another braita that's brought by Rav Zvid, the Bei Rav Hoshaya. That was from the Braito to Rabbi Hoshaya. The Gemara in many places says that the Braito to Rabbi Hoshaya and Rabbi Chiya, who are Talmidim of Rabbi, those have the most efficacy to them. If we bring a Braito like that, then we allow that to question a Mishnah, we'll allow that to question an Amora. Other Braitot are more suspect in terms of their sourcing as well as their quality, and therefore the Gemara might dismiss it at some point as being a incorrect Braito or a Braito that doesn't have enough strength to override a Mishnah or our understanding of a Mishnah or an Amora. So over here, if we quote a braita from Rabbi Yeshaya, that's a braita that means it should match with our Mishnah and something that should give us a qualification that helps us to understand the Mishnah. And therefore, it'll be a problem for the previous braita that we brought if it disagrees with it. And that's what's going to happen here. That martev shel yayin ani mocher lecha. So again, the same cases that we had in the previous braita. I'm selling you a seller of wine. Notein lo yayin shekulo yafeh. Then you've got to give him wine that is all good. Martev ze shel yayin ani mocher lecha. He says, I'm selling you this seller of wine. Then notein lo yayin shekulo yafeh. Then he has to give him high quality wine. Umikabel alav eser kosusod lemeah. And he accepts a 10% loss rate. And that is the otsar. When we were speaking about in our Mishnah, martev shel yayin, which is a storage area, a cellar of wine, that is what was mentioned by Mishnatenu. So now, in the case of this braita, you have a braita from Boshaya that addresses two of the cases in the previous braita, the case of martev shel yayin and the martev ze shel yayin. But what it does is it says that the second case, martev ze shel yayin, is equivalent to our case in our Mishnah. So now you have two problems. First of all, the Gemara wanted to set up the Mishnah as being the first case in the previous braita. The second thing is you have a stira between the braitot. In the first case of martev shel yayin, I'm selling you a cellar of wine, everybody agrees that you have to have yayin shekulo yafet. You have to have good quality wine, period. Both braitot say that. The second case is the problem, which is martev ze shel yayin. If I say this particular cellar of wine I'm selling to you, then the first braitot says you have to give him wine, but it can be even low quality wine, even nimkar b'chanut. The second braita says you have to give them the highest quality wine, but you have an acceptable loss rate of there of 10%. That's an acceptable loss rate. So now you have a difference in the braitot as to what you do when you say martev ze shel yayin, number one. Number two is the second braita says that case is the case of our Mishnah. Unlike what the Gemara wanted to suggest, which is the first case in the first braita was the case in our Mishnah. So that's what the Gemara is trying to deal with now. Ela matzniten nami de amarle ze. So now, what you see here is that the case in our Mishnah is a case where he also said the word ze. Kasha ze aze. So the two braitot are problematic because when you use martev ze shel yayin, over there, you have different outcomes in the braitot. Gemara says, lo kasha. That is not a problem. Ha de amarle de mikpeh, ha de lo amarle de mikpeh. Makes a difference as whether he says I'm going to use it for cooking, or I'm not going to use it for cooking. The difference being that if a person uses wine for cooking, you need a long time for it to last. When you cook with wine, you use a small amount each time, and then it's got to have a good shelf life to it. Otherwise, when you leave it after you take some for the cooking, the next time, and the next time, and the next time, eventually it's going to go bad, and you need duration or light shelf life to it. So you need the highest quality wine in order to do that. If a person is not Lola mikveh, if he doesn't need it for cooking, then the assumption is that it'll be utilized much faster. If he opens up a barrel of wine to drink, they're going to drink the barrel of wine much faster than they are going to use it for cooking. So given that differential, you also have a different need for shelf life with the wine. So now, if he specifies that it is mikveh, that it's a case where he wants it to be for cooking, that means it's got to be the highest quality wine to give it shelf life. If he does not specify that, then he does not need the shelf life, and you can give him even lower quality wine. Obviously, can't give him vinegar, but you can give him lower quality wine. So now, that's what the Gemara says here. The Rav Zvid, the second braita that we brought of Rav Zvid, Damalei de Mikpeh, is a case where he said that I'm using it for cooking. Braita, Damalei de Mikpeh. The previous braita, the first braita that we brought down, is a case where he says, I don't need it for cooking. Hilkach, therefore, Martev shel yayin, if it is a seller of wine, and he says, Ramalei the mikpeh, and he also says that I need it for cooking, notein lo yayin shekulo yafeh. In that case, you gotta give him the best quality wine. Martev ze shel yayin, he says, this seller of wine, Ramalei the mikpeh, and he told him I need it for cooking, notein lo yayin shekulo yafeh, he's gotta give him the highest quality wine, umikabel alav eser kosusod lemeah, but he does accept a loss rate of 10%. So, martev shel yayin, generically, if you just say a generic seller of wine, you have to give him high quality low wine with no loss rate, as long as he specified it was the mikpeh. Assuming that he specified it, that means that he gets a full seller of wine without any loss rate and good quality wine. If he says, this cellar of wine that I'm going to sell to you, over there, if he says it's the mikveh, he says I'm going to use it for cooking, he's got to give him the highest quality wine, but he accepts a loss rate of 10%. Below him are the mikveh, if he doesn't say that I need it for cooking, then you give him the wine that is sold in the stores. I mean, if you give him lower quality wine, it just has to qualify to be called wine, but nothing else beyond that. So now, Yibayelu, Gemara asks the question, Martev shel yayin, v'lo olam le mikveh mai. The case where he says that it is a cellar of wine that I'm looking for, but he doesn't specify that I'm going to use it for cooking. So now, the seller with an S says that he's going to sell him a generic cellar with a C. In that case, when he specifies that it's for cooking, it's clear you have to give the highest quality wine. If he doesn't specify for its cooking, then what's the status there? We don't have that addressed by what we're saying.
And as the Rashbam notes over here, you have one thing leaning in each direction. The thing in your favor is that you mentioned that it was a Martev shel yayin, the generic wine cellar. The one thing that's against you is that you didn't specify that it was for mikpeh. So how do we balance between those two things? And that is the machloket amuraim over here as to how much do you need in order to garner the best situation. Do you need it to be both, that you have a generic wine cellar plus mikpeh? Just like in the case of Martev shel yayin le mikpeh, where you have one thing, the tova, which is the fact that you mentioned that it was for mikpeh, and one thing that is against you because you use zeh, this particular cellar. Over there we said you get the best wine with losses, and so too over here, where you have one thing in your favor, one thing against you, you'll have the same outcome, which is you'll get the best wine with accepted losses. Or is it simply enough to say that it's a generic wine cellar, even without the term mikpeh? That Martev shel yayin is enough to garner you the full rights of kula yofeh without any losses? Because, as the Rashbam says here, most people who are buying wine are going to use it for cooking as well. And therefore, that should have been an underlying assumption over here, especially where he just said a generic wine cellar. And it'll be different than the other cases in our Mishnah, like the figs that are accepting losses of 10%, because a chavit shel yayin, a barrel of wine, is a significant item. It's so significant that people are makpid when you pay that much money for it, that all the items that are there are going to be of good quality, because you didn't accept upon yourself just to take whatever is there.
Pligi ba Rav Acha v'Ravina. Rav Acha and Ravina argue about this. Chad amar mikabel, v'chad amar lo mikabel. One of them says he accepts a loss rate, and one of them says that he does not accept a loss rate. Manda amar mikabel, the one who says that he does accept a loss rate, diek mi Rav Zvid. He is able to be midayek from the lashon of Rav Zvid's braita. Diktani, because the Rav Zvid's braita says, Martev shel yayin ani mocher lecha. If I'm selling you a generic seller of wine, noteinu yayin shekulo yofeh. You have to give him high quality wine. Vulkimna, and we already established that the braita of Rav Zvid is speaking about, damalai the mikpeh. That it has to be a case that he's using it for cooking. Taima darmalei the mikpeh. Only because he said that I'm using it for cooking does it work. Ha lo amalei the mikpeh mikabel. That means if he doesn't say that he has to accept a loss rate. So the individual who says that once you do not specify that it's for cooking, then you accept a loss rate, he says, look, Rav Zvid's braita, we already established, it's a case when you say generically, I'm going to buy a cellar of wine, and it is the mikpeh, it's for cooking. We said you have to give him high quality wine with no loss rate. Implications of that are, if you don't specify that it's for cooking, that you're going to accept something of a lesser amount. What does that mean? You're going to accept the loss rate there. That's the way he reads it. Mandamar lo mikabel, the one who says that he does not accept the loss rate, deyek mi braita. He's been deyek from the first braita that we brought down. Tetani martev shel yayin ani mocher lecha. When it says that I'm going to generically sell you a cellar of wine, notein lo yayin shekuli yofeh. He gives them high quality wine, vukimna, and we established that braita was speaking about dolamar le mikpeh, that he didn't specify that it was for cooking. Before, we made a distinction between the first braita and the braita of Rav Zvid to explain the stira, martev zeh shel yayin, and in doing so, we said one of them, Rav Zvid's case, was a case where you specified that it was for cooking. And the other braita's case, the first braita's case, was it wasn't specified for cooking. Well, that has implications on the first case in each of the two braita. The first case in each of the two braita is martev shel yayin, buying a generic cellar of wine. Well, if I buy a generic cellar of wine, what's the din? Well, One brayta, now the Rav Zvid's brayta says, I said not only that, but I also said it's for cooking. The first brayta was, I said that, but I did not say it was for cooking. So now the diuk out of that would be the opposite in each case, which is in the case of Rav Zvid, it means you have to specify that it's for cooking, otherwise you're going to accept the loss rate. And the other brayta says, I didn't say it's for cooking, and yet I still have to provide all good quality wines. That implies that you don't need to say it in order to have that be the case. So you have a stira now that is generated by Okimta and the two brayot that creates a setup in the cases which gives you a diuk in either direction. The truth is that neither one is conclusive, and that's why you end up with two opinions over here. Well, naman the diuk mi Rav Zvid, according to one who's mendayek out of the brayot of Rav Zvid, kasha brayto. What about the other brayta, which seems to indicate opposite him? Zagmar says, Hasure Mechsra, he's going to say that brayta is missing some transition words. Vachintani, what is said over there? Bameh Dvarim Amurim. When is that true? Damar Le the Mikveh, he specified that it was for cooking. Harlom Le the Mikveh, if he did not specify it was for cooking, Mikabel, then he accepts a loss rate. Umartev Zeshel Yayin, Vlom Le the Mikveh, and a case where he specifies that this cellar I'm going to buy of wine, or I'm selling you this cellar of wine, and he didn't specify it was for cooking, then he gives him the wine that is sold in the stores. He can even give him low quality wine. Well, the one who's been dayek out of the first brayta, kasha the Rav Zvid, the diuk out of Rav Zvid's brayta is problematic. Dukimna, because we said, we said over there that it was only because he specified that it was used for cooking. Had he not specified that it was used for cooking, Mikabel, he does accept the loss rate. He says no. The truth is that even if he didn't say it was for cooking, he wouldn't accept any loss rate. So then why is Rav Zvid's bright the time at a case where you said it's for cooking? That was to relieve the contradiction in the second case of the brighta. It's not because of the first case in the brighta. It doesn't make a difference. Whether it's for cooking or not cooking, you don't get any loss rate. So then why by Rav Zvid do we say it's a case where he says it's for cooking? That's for the second case. Martev Zesho Yayin, because of the difference between Rav Zvid's Breita and the first Breita, we needed to say that. But otherwise, it would not be conclusive. So now what you have over here is you have two Breitot and you have three cases. I'm going to start from the bottom case, which is an instance where you say that Martev Zehani Mochelecha, I'm selling you this cellar. So in the first brayta, it says, when I'm selling you that cellar, you get what it is. It's as is. He didn't specify it was wine. He said, whatever's in this cellar, you're buying. That means it even could be vinegar. Whatever's there, he gets, you get it as is. That's what the first brayta says. The truth is that the second brayta does not address that at all. So everybody agrees over there, since you didn't specify the word wine, and you said this cellar, then you get it as is, and it's kulo chometz, even if it's totally vinegar, then everybody agrees that you got what you bought because you didn't specify you wanted wine, and it didn't specify anything generically. You said this cellar, so you get whatever's in there. On the other hand, if in the case where you say this cellar, but then you add in, I'm going to use it for cooking, there it already introduces a new possibility. Why is it that you're going to use it for cooking? What does that mean? If you're going to say, oh, well, vinegar is used for cooking, you don't need to tell me that. Vinegar doesn't go bad. Vinegar has a long shelf life. So if you're buying this and you know, you think it's going to be vinegar, you don't need to specify I'm going to use it for cooking. And therefore, the Rashbam says over here, if you specify it's for cooking, that's the equivalent of specifying that it's for wine. And therefore, you'll have the same din as saying, Martev Zeh Shel Yayin. And when you say Martev Zeh, Le mikpeh will have the same din, because saying le mikpeh by a cellar means that you're talking about wine and not vinegar, and therefore the din will be, if you specify the mikpeh, when you say martev zeh, you have to give him yain yafeh, but you accept loss rates of 10%. And in an instance where you did not specify that it was the mikpeh, it was for cooking, you get what's there, no matter what it is, including if it's vinegar. Now, in the case of Martev Zeshel Yayin, I mean Mochelecha, I'm selling you this cellar of wine. So now we have to balance between the word Yayin and this cellar. So, depending what you said, if you say Lemikpeh, I am doing using this for cooking, then Rav Zvid's Breita tells us the din, which is Notein Lo Yayin Yafet. You have to give him high quality wine, but you accept the loss rate of 10%. So that's how you deal with it. The word Yayin demands that you give him the highest quality wine. The Zeh says that there's going to be a loss rate. The Zed, that this seller means that you're going to have a loss rate in there. That's the way we deal with it. If he specified it was for cooking. If he did not specify that it was for cooking, then we don't know if he really needs it to have shelf life. And therefore, the burden of proof is on him, and the seller can say, the seller with an S can say, when I sold you this cellar, I thought you just needed it to drink, or I needed it for a short time, short span. Given that, then you have a right to sell him yayin amnimkar b'chanut. You can sell him even the lowest quality wine. Last case that we have to deal with, which is the first case in the both brayot, is the case of martef shel yayin ani mocher lecha. I'm selling you a cellar of wine. So over there, both brayot said, noten lo yayin shekula yofe. You have to give him the highest quality wine. The problem is now that we established that Rav Zvid's brayta is a case where you said the mikveh, that I said I'm going to use it for cooking. The other brayta said that it's not in a case of cooking. I didn't say anything besides give me a yayin yefeh. Both of them say you get a whole good quality wine. The question is, which of those is governing? Which one do you take as being the real case, and which one is just brought down as incidental? So one mandamer says that Rav Zvid's brayta is exact, and only when you say it's for cooking do you have to give him 100% of good quality wine. If you don't specify that, then you can give him good quality wine with a 10% loss rate. And the other brayta that said that even without saying it, you get kula yofeh, that brayta was missing a transition. That was b'medvar momorim. When is that true? When he says the mikpeh. If he doesn't say the mikpeh, then you have a loss rate of 10%. The other mandamer says no, that the first brayta is governing, and therefore even in a case where you don't say the mikpeh, you have to give 100% of wine that is good quality. Rav Zvid's brayta that says that you have to say the mikpeh, that was brought down because of the second case. It's not right. The first case, whether you say it or you don't say it, doesn't matter. The reason they brought it down is because of the second case in the brayta. So that'll be the ways to read these two brayot. And our Mishnah will be that second case in the brayta. It'll be the second case in Rav Zvid's brayta, which is in a case where you say, Vartek zeh shel yayin le mikpeh. It's a case where you say it's this particular martef, which I'm going to use for cooking. It's this particular cellar of wine that I'm going to use for cooking. And in that case, we say that you have to give him kula yayin yafe, you have to give him a high quality wine, but you have a 10% loss rate. The truth is that the Baal Yad Tosfot asks on the individual who says that mikabel, the one who accepts that even in the case where you say martef shel yayin, without specifying mikpeh, that you also have a loss rate there. That could also be the case in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah could be a case where you say martef shel yayin, and you don't specify that it is for cooking. In that case, one of the mandamarim, one of the moraim here suggested that that means that you have to give them high quality wine with a 10% loss rate, which is our Mishnah. So Tosfot asks, why doesn't he answer that in our Mishnah? He leaves it as Itzarech Iyun. Why that mandamar in the Amora doesn't say that our Mishnah is acceptable? Other Rishonim just say that Enochanami. Gemara gave you one way to explain the Mishnah, but Enochanami, this would also be an explanation of the Mishnah. There are a couple of cases. As long as there's a loss rate there, those can fit into our Mishnah. Now, the one who says that you do not accept the loss rate at all, then the question is, Rabbi Chia before, who said that when you sell a chavit, that there is no loss rate acceptable, then why did he specify a chavit? He could have said a whole cellar. According to that mandamar, if you specify a whole cellar of wine, and you don't specify that it's for cooking, there's still no loss rate accepted over there. It means no matter what, when you sell him a cellar of wine, you have to give him high quality wine, and there's no loss rate accepted. Why did Rabbi Chia then say the word chavit? It's even a whole cellar full of them. You have to provide high quality wine without any exception. What he ends up saying is exactly what the Rashbam says in the previous Amud, which is the Chiddush is the Chavit. If he sold him a cellar of wine, it's clear that he's not going to use it all up so fast, and he has to give him high quality stuff. To sell a single barrel of wine, you could have thought that he needed it for immediate use, or he's going to sell it right away, and therefore you wouldn't need to give him high quality wine. And that's the Chiddush of Rabbi Chia. Even by a barrel, you have to give him high quality wine. Right, so now the Gemara moves on and says, "I'm Rabbi Yehuda. Yain ani mikar b'chanut. This wine that is sold in the stores that we mentioned before, which is on the edge, it is wine that smells like vinegar but tastes like wine. Mivarchin ala bori pri agafen. You still make the bracha bori pri agafen, meaning it still qualifies to be called wine, or it's enough to be called wine that you'd make a bracha bori pri agafen. V'chistamar gabi chamra de akrim lomali." Chista says, what are you talking about? Wine that's already starting to harden, coagulate, meaning that it's going bad. And here you can see there's an alternate girsa in the Oruch of the Akris, but it's something that is heading in a direction in which it's going to become vinegar. The way that the Rashbam explains it is agra, or maybe aged, balaz, einu yayin koses. It is wine that is deteriorating, fermenting to the point where it's going to turn into vinegar. So if you look in the Rabbeinu Gershom, he says, the akrim is shechmitz. It's already turned into vinegar. And he's saying, so Rabbi Chista says, once it's vinegar, how can you make a bracha bari priya gofen? If it's already deteriorated to the point where it's barely called wine anymore. And so Rabbi Chista thinks that you should make a bracha of shakol niyeh bidvaro, and not bari priya gofen, because this poor quality wine that is sold in the stores, that already smells like vinegar and tastes like wine, that already has reached a point where it's no longer classified as wine for the bracha, and you make a bracha of shakol niyeh bidvaro and not bari priya gofen. So Rav Chista's point is that it's no longer got the geder of being classified as wine, and therefore the bracha, or the proper bracha to make over here, is shakol niyeh bidvaro. So we have a question from a braita. Apache ipsha, if you have bread that has gone bad, stale, moldy, rotten, velayayin shekrim, or if you say the girsa shekris, wine that is either smells like vinegar, or according to the Rabbeinu Gershom, turned into vinegar, veltavshi sheibra tzurato, and you have a cooked dish that has lost its appearance, meaning that it's really gone bad, omer shakol niyeh bidvaro. In all these cases, you make a bracha of shakol niyeh bidvaro. The bread would have been a motzi, but it's lost its status as bread, and therefore you make shakol niyeh bidvaro. The wine would have been bari priya gofen. You make a shakol because it's no longer classified as wine. It's already reached the point where it's considered or classified as vinegar. And with regards to the tavshil, if it had one of the five minim, a dagan in it, you would make a bari minim mizonot on it. But now that it's gone bad and lost its appearance, that has already brought it to the realm of shakol niyeh bidvaro. But you see from here that yayin shekrim, which right now we're equating with yayin shochanot, the braita seems to indicate that you say shakol niyeh bidvaro, and that'd be a question on Rabbi Yehuda's position. So I'm Rav Zvid, moda Rabbi Yehuda bepurtzema demizavin akarnoto. Yehuda agrees with that type of quality of wine that's called purtzema, that is sold on the street corners, that is considered to be shakol niyeh bidvaro. So once again over here, the Rabbeinu Gershom gives us the definition of what this purtzema is. It says, v'oto yayin shechmitz kol kach she'enu nimkar. It's turned sour so much, so the wine, that it's no longer sold in the stores, kim al akronot, except on the street corners, klomar b'pashat rachim, and the forks in the roads, k'day mizuman ovrei drachim. So that people who are traveling by or passing by, bisapanim, or the sailors, v'konim oto, the fish torach ulehem, machmat tirda, she'ochim lakzor be'ir. It's too much effort for them to go into the city to buy the wine. Liknot yayin yafen, to buy higher quality wine. V'konim oto, she'matzui lehem. They buy it just because it's there. V'otohu ra yoter, me'oto nimkar b'chanut. And this is a lower quality wine than that is found in the store. So over here you have the lowest quality of wine, this purtzema. It's so low quality that even the stores can't offer it. And of course the Balabai's not going to offer it. But there are places where people will buy it. Those are people like sailors and travelers who are, first of all, don't have a lot of money with them. Number two is they don't have the wherewithal to go into the city and buy the wine or the good quality wine. They just need a drink. So that's like the guys who sell the water at the street corners in the hot summer days. So over there, you need the water, so you just buy it. You don't ask about the quality, you don't ask about the price. You just need the water because it's so hot out there. So a similar type of idea over here. They're not asking about the quality of the wine, they just need something to drink. And therefore, they're buying something even of low quality. So there, what Rav Zvid is suggesting is, there Rav Yehuda would agree, it's deteriorated so much to the point that it would be classified as a shakol. So for him, there are three gradations. There is yayin yafeh, good quality wine, which is bari priya gofen. There is yayin nimkar b'chanut, or yayin shekrim, which is low quality wine, but it's still high enough quality that it'd be sold in the stores. That's still bari priya gofen. There's then a lower quality of wine, which is already basically vinegar.
That, he agrees, is Sha'akol, because it's such low quality and it has no semblance of wine anymore. It not only doesn't smell like wine, it probably doesn't even taste like wine anymore. That, he agrees, is Sha'akol. And their middle category, the Ni'ayinim Karbachanut, is the Machlok between Rav Yehuda and Rav Chista. Rav Yehuda says that still qualifies as wine as Bari Piyagofen. Rav Chista says, no, that's no different than the wine that is sold on the street corners. It already smells like vinegar. It should be a Sha'akol. So I'm really Abaye the Rav Yosef. So Abaye queries Rav Yosef, Ha Rav Yehuda, Ha Rav Chista. We have a machlok between Rav Yehuda and Rav Chista. Mar Kaman Svirle. Who do you hold like? So Amarle, Matnita Yedana. I don't know who I hold like, but I know a Braita. The Tanya, the Braita says, Habudeket Chaviyot, Yot Mafrisha Lav Chuma. Someone who checks a barrel of wine in order to use that barrel of wine for future separations of Chuma and Maser. So the rule is that you're not allowed to take off Trumot and Masrot from vinegar on wine or wine on vinegar. According to Rabbi Yehuda, that's Ikar Alocha, it doesn't work at all. According to the Chachamim, you shouldn't do it. B'diavad, if you do it, it works. But the Chatchila, you shouldn't do it. So a person who's going to be Mafrish Trumot and Masrot from a barrel needs to check that the barrel is wine that he's then being Mafrish from on other barrels of wine. So for instance, every time he goes to take out wine, he'll say the Trumot and Masrot are in that barrel that I left behind is being designated for that. But that only works if that barrel is classified as wine. According to the Rishbam, it's a case where he took out from it, tasted it, took off Trumot and Masrot from what he took out, and tasted it to make sure it was wine. On the other hand, the Balei Tosafot say that he doesn't literally have to taste it. He can taste it through its smell. He can just smell it and know that it is good quality wine. And then he leaves that barrel or the residual in that barrel and says, every time I need to take off Trumot and Masrot, it's going to come from this barrel. V'achar kach nimtzei tchometz. Later on, much later on, say a month later, 2 months later, 3 months later, he finds that it is vinegar. Kol gimel yom vadai. For 3 days, it's considered to be vadai. Migam elech safek. From there to forward, it's considered to be a safek. As you can see now, the Gemara's question is going to be Maika Amar. And we're going to have two Amoraim that are going to try to explain the meaning of the Braita. The way that Rashbam reads it is that Rabbi Yosef did not have this argument, or did not bring down this argument of the Amoraim. Rabbi Yosef simply brought the Braita down, and that was his proof. We, as the Gemara, now are trying to figure out what that proof is that Rabbi Yosef brought from the Braita. So first, we have to understand what the meaning of the Braita is. Once we understand the meaning of the Braita, then we can ascribe it to explaining how Rabbi Yosef saw from this Braita and answer it to Rabbi Yehuda and Rav Chista's Machloket. So that's what we're going to do tomorrow. We're going to try to explain the Braita and then understand what Rav Yosef was saying. But for right now, we're going to stop 3 lines down on the top of Tzadik Vav Amud Aleph.